Hey everyone, this episode of Bad for Business is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. For a few bucks a month, DollarShaveClub.com delivers great razors and shave supplies right to your door. Plans start at $3 a month and signing up takes about 2 minutes. There's no membership fees and no commitment. Plus, they have a money-back guarantee, so you really have nothing to lose. Stop trudging to the store for overpriced razors. Join DollarShaveClub.com/B4B. Again, support our podcast by joining DollarShaveClub.com/B4B. On with the show.
Bad for Business. When's Bad for Business coming out?
Do you think that's a good title?
Hold on, wait, did I hear you right? Did you say Jerry Ferrara as a podcast host? That's really funny. What the hell is he going to talk about?
I think that a lot of people have their stick. You know, they get on air or they get on TV or whatever they do. And, you know, there's something that they default to, like a way of performing. You know what I mean? He's like a genuine listener and a genuine present participant, which is difficult to do.
I think you're good at what you do. You can speak very easily to people and speak on a lot of subjects. Why not you, Jerry? Remember who told you that? Why not you?
Podcast? He's got a podcast? Okay. And what's it called? Bad for Business? He's calling it Bad for Business? So he knows he's going to flop. Oh, my goodness. All right. Hey, Jerry Ferrara, it's your good pal, Rich Eisen, wanting to wish you the best of luck with your new podcast, Bad for Business. I'm sure you are going to be great at it. You'll be a natural. Can't wait to hear all the fun stuff you're going to do on this podcast that's going to kill it. All right, buddy. All right. Did you get that? His show's going to blow.
It's good for Bad for Business. It's good for me.
All right. I want to take this moment to welcome back. You are our first two-time guest, Mr. Doug Ellen. No guest besides some sports-related fantasy nerd stuff we've done. We've never had a repeat guest. We almost didn't have you because the first time we interviewed you, we had technical problems with the travel equipment, and now you came into the studio here at my house. And you want to tell the audience what happened, Doug? What was happening?
Well, what I'm wondering is if you really just don't want me on and you're pretending to do these things. But beautiful Bree here had some technical difficulties.
She always does.
Subsequently found out we're pretty simplistic.
I just have to look over to see if there's like audio waves going on. I see audio waves.
So realistically though, what's happening is I brought my son. He came right from school and you know, the 5 to 6 was our window for for talent. I'm now talent. And I brought my son Lucas with me, who's starving. So, but because of the technical errors, we're now going to run a little late.
Oh, no. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Hi.
Bree, is his mic on? Do we have sound?
His mic is
hey,
on.
Look, you know what? See, a little luck for the younger Ellen. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
So you were just in there playing Call of Duty. How's that working out?
It's pretty good.
Do you like it?
I do.
Are you starving right now?
I am.
There's snacks on the kitchen table. For those of you who don't know, I'm sure a lot of you do, Doug's son also was we have another cast member. This is the first, another Entourage cast member. He played Ari Gold's son, Jonah. Feels like a long time ago. You're now taller than me, Luke. How old are you now?
13.
Oh my God. I remember when you were just like this little tiny thing, and now you're like a full grown man. It's unbelievable.
And he's got, you know, which he's got the bar mitzvah now, which we did an episode, Luke, you don't know about, one of my favorite episodes we ever did.
That's right.
And one of Jerry and Dylan's, some of their best, not their work, but some of my favorite writing for their characters was in that episode. So we'll see if we can relive that. Actually, Jerry, you can put Jerry on the spot, see if he's going to come show up at the bar mitzvah now.
Is this here's what I'll tell you, Luke, at my advanced age now, because I have a birthday coming up. I like official invitations. I know you're kind of like this too, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want the like, well, if you're around, you either, like, if you're going to invite me right here, right now on the podcast, I will give you an answer.
Do you want to come to my bar mitzvah?
When is it?
January 31st.
But no, I'm kidding. Of course, I would love to be there. Is there going to be a theme?
I think our theme is fire.
Fire. That doesn't mean we're going to light the place on fire. That just means
it's going to look like it's on
Lucas
fire.
Lucas volunteers at the fire station, and he's very into that and may want to pursue that as a career. He doesn't think acting pays enough, so he wants to work at the fire station.
Luke, it does not. Trust me when I tell you, it does not.
We don't know. You know, it's interesting about the bar mitzvah episode. We're on.
Let's go to the bar mitzvah episode.
Because, you know, when we were writing that episode, it was
Emmanuel's debut, right? That was Emmanuel Shrieky's. That was her debut.
Yeah, and it's interesting looking back at that because we had genius Larry Charles working on that episode, working on the show at that time.
Yes,
and it's interesting when you have different voices who you're not necessarily in sync with, different ideas come out that could be interesting. And I remember Larry wanted to theme the bar mitzvah, the Holocaust. And he was going to have tables, you know.
And that wasn't a laugh, ladies and gentlemen. That was a...
Yeah, I mean, it was. And Larry is a genius, and it is that kind of thing. It shows you the creative process, how you go when you're in a room with a bunch of people, you throw out ideas, some work, some don't. And maybe, by the way, maybe that would have worked, but it was like, you know, there were going to be tables, Auschwitz, and say, what is Aunt Ellen doing in Auschwitz, you know? And, it was interesting, but
can you imagine
I love
if
and
it
miss
was
Larry. Do you remember
the
Larry?
Holocaust bar mitzvah episode?
Yeah, it would have been different. It would have been different.
The one I miss Larry, and I have fond memories early on of Larry Charles, who was from Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld. But the fondest memory
is Borat.
Yes, of course, is that he was kind of the Gary Busey wrangler, if I recall, right? Or a little bit of that. Didn't Gary Busey ban Lev from set, one of the other producers, Steve Levinson?
Yes,
didn't that happen?
Yes,
Gary Busey, God bless his soul. We love Gary. One of Doug, I mean, someone from Doug's mind that, I don't know if you created that character or if Gary was that character. Yeah, didn't he say
Gary
to you,
did what he wanted.
I'm not going to give you, what was his line to you? I'm not going to give you your words.
I won't give you your words. I'll give you the truth. And... God. I talked about this before, but first season when we had no budget and Gary would talk for 20 minutes, he would be burning our film that we couldn't afford, and you couldn't stop him. He would just keep going and going and going. And Larry actually had to deal with a lot of crazies. I mean, between Rob Weiss and I having near fistfights almost every day, and Larry would have his peace beads or whatever they're.
Yes.
And he would keep us calm and
very zen.
And Larry, you know, Larry brought, which was kind of a version of Larry. Larry brought, you know, one of the best characters we ever had. He brought Val Kilmer on. He got Val to do it.
In the Sherpa episode. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. He had the look. For those of you listening, Val Kilmer's beard and hair is a la Larry Charles.
Yeah. Then we have a picture of them we should put up.
We could put it on the Instagram for sure.
That is very similar, the way they look at each other. And Larry also brought Larry David, which was my idol, and to get him on the show was incredible.
So. And there was something I remember. I'm going back now, thinking. I remember Kevin Dillon was in the Larry David scene, and
Kevin
I remember
Dillon
he was like, "I read for Seinfeld."
Yeah.
And there was the most awkward moment, which obviously Larry, there's no one better than Larry David at awkward moments. Where but to Dillon's credit, I remember he kind of does any parts in there for me. It's just you want to scream, but you also want there to be a part in there.
One of my favorite days ever, Kevin Dillon, who. You know, I love actors who actually like my lines.
People are begging for Dillon to be on this podcast. Yeah. I tell them all, you have
it
a better
be
chance.
To get Kevin Dillon.
He won't know. He won't. I think he'll think it's a setup. Like I'm trying to get him to.
Well, that's
to
what
mess
happened
up.
That day because Kevin Dillon, unlike Jerry, Kevin Dillon loves the words.
That's not true.
And Kevin Dillon doesn't want to do improv. That's not something Kevin Dillon wants to do. So when he got there with Larry David, there was no script.
Zero.
It basically just said, which is the only time we've ever done it on the show, it said we'll figure it out. And Kevin got to set. He's like, bro, what is this? You know?
I said, he has a process, a very detail-oriented process.
And he delivers. And,
always.
You know, and he was very panicked. And once we got into it, I think he loved it. You know, I think he was like, wow, I don't have to memorize lines. I can just kind of talk. And I think he enjoyed
it. And Piven did something great too in there at the very end. He says something to Johnny Drama where he's like, don't ever say that in front of a real effing client again. Yeah. Which shows you the gears that they have to go through depending
Absolutely.
On who's talking. I mean, you were saying Larry was around a lot of fights with Rob Weiss.
Yeah.
What I mean, were those over story issues, or was that just could be as simple as what are we eating for lunch? I mean, because you guys are old friends,
anything.
Old pals.
I mean, Rob and I, you know, are the the real version of the entourage, where you would have, you know, friends who just go at each other nonstop. Like, we, the most unrealistic thing about the show is how well those four guys got along. I mean,
right, we never really fought.
There were like three fights ever. But Rob and I, who I love like a brother, I mean, we fought over everything. We fought over, where we were eating for lunch. Rob, you know, he doesn't like heights, so we fought over where the office was one season. We didn't want to work on the ninth floor on 9000 Sunset. But
that's awesome.
You know, Rob was the one guy when we started, I was like, you know, Rob and I grew up, we have the same, not the same, but we have voices that I could feel being similar and sensibilities. And he was kind of the perfect match for it, but we didn't know what we were doing. We had no idea. So 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, we'd be sitting there screaming at each other. Not, probably neither of us really knew whether we were right or wrong, but we were just arguing. And Larry would, you know, massage his beads and he would calm us down and all would be well. But first season was rough.
Here's what I remember from walking into, and I'm trying to really go back. I'm a week short of turning 35, by the way. So I was 24 when I'm telling the story. Going into the production office early season one, you know, I remember walking in, and anytime I get into your office, I just remember papers always flying out of the printer. There was always papers being printed out of your office everywhere, and you'd come up to me, be like, shut the door, and then we'd literally play Xbox for 10 minutes. We'd beat each other up in Knockout Kings, yeah, which went on to become a part of the show eventually, and then I'd leave, and I guess you'd go back to whatever that printer was spitting out. Yeah. There was just always piles of script pages everywhere you looked.
Yeah, thank God for iPads and computers. I killed a lot of trees because I'm obsessive and I read the same thing over and over and over, like Rain Man, 1,000 times. And you know, it's my real way of procrastinating and not moving forward, which is why I usually write the first 25 pages of the script in 5 minutes and the last 5 pages in 5 weeks.
The hardest, right?
You know, well, for me, but I would always print every morning. I'd be printing and printing and printing, and I think that hurt our budget as much as Gary Busey's long speeches on.
That was another improv scene too, and I remember really, really like looking at you. It was the first time I literally reached out to you as like the boss, like, Doug, help me here. You're leaving, Lucas? You bored?
You trying to sneak out?
You bored? Over? You could go. You can.
No.
You sure? It's all right. You want to get back to Call of Duty? You want to go hit the snack table, craft service tables in the kitchen?
Yeah, I'll be right back. Okay.
You can go in whatever you
Come
want.
Go as you want.
with that Gary Busey thing, I remember because like I think in that episode I like destroy some of his artwork, and I knew there was going to be a price to pay, but it wasn't in the script really, and you knew it was happening on the beach. There's a big beach party, and I just remember getting down there, and you come up to me, and you're like, he wants to baptize you. And I went, well, I've already been baptized. Wait, me? He wants to baptize your character. I'm like, okay, does that require us to get in the ocean? He's like, I don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know what it requires.
And up until action, never having one clue. And now, this is the 1%. Like, I know you've been asked this question. I've been asked this question, like, how much of the show is scripted? And I will say, if it's not 100%, it's because of the moments like that. That's the 1%.
Yeah.
Because that so rarely happened. But yeah, I remember just waiting, they called action and they were just like, just go up and say, Gary, I'm sorry for breaking your thing, and he'll go there. And
Gary, you know, you would just pray and you would get magic and you knew it was there and you knew you'd have to find it. But you know, there's so many stories with Gary. I mean, Gary at the first season premiere, he went up to Kevin Connelly and said, how do I know you? And Kevin said, we worked together. And he said, on what? And he said, on this. He said, on this.
Oh, you know,
that's
God.
Why we're here, Gary. But I love him, and he's back in the movie, and he kills it. And he's, you know, I got Gary Busey with Baron Davis, the L.A. Kings. Who else is he?
Oh, my God. I remember. Oh, that's right. What a lineup that was.
Yeah. What a day.
Gary Busey and the Stanley Cup champions sharing
shirtless.
A phrase. Shirtless. That's right, ladies out there. The entire first line of the LA Kings is basically shirtless doing a scene with Gary Busey. Is that too much? Should we cut that out?
No. I mean, I think it's great. And, you know, I think you'll appreciate it. And then we'll talk about Mike Richards, who we love, who didn't want to go shirtless. I mean, these guys, professional athletes.
I can relate.
Should all be built so well. And
I
don't want to do it, you know. But
I can relate for
it.
Far different reasons.
He was a trooper, and he manned up, and he did it, and he killed it. So.
One quick thing to close out the Gary Busey thing, and this was from his own mouth. I think this is maybe when you brought him back for the episode where he, like, paints Johnny Drama or whatever. He had done a season on Celebrity Apprentice where he was awesome on Celebrity Apprentice. And in the show also was Marley Matlin, who, for those of you who don't know, she's deaf, but she literally was suspicious that Gary had like hearing loss,
right,
and sent him to a specialist. And they were like, he literally was losing, he was like legally deaf in one ear. So they gave him an aid. And then I remember the next, even like in the movie, there was a difference. Cause you remember he was always just like, what? Like it almost seemed like he couldn't hear. We didn't know if he was just doing a character thing. He literally was like almost legally deaf.
Well, the last thing I'll say about Gary on the movie, and you know, I was like, you know, we have a short amount of time to shoot this movie.
Yes.
And we got to do it right. But you know, this is going to be the one thing that, again, I'm going to improv. I'm not even going to try to write things because it'd just be a waste of time
and energy.
And I go over to Gary before, you know, right when he arrives, I go over and I go, Gary, so we can do this just like last time. And he goes, what last time? And I go, you know, when we did the show last week, because I don't remember that. And I'm like, I'm literally going, do you not remember how we did it, or you don't remember doing the show? And I still have no idea the Which answer to that question. But we sat there and I would just feed him ideas. I would just say things and he would just go on for 5-10 minutes. It was unbelievable. And people were clapping when he would finish.
I mean, at this point, could you even pick a favorite cameo? It'd be impossible for you.
Impossible. You could. I mean, it would be impossible. Obviously, you know, my friends and marrying that with certain events in my life, like obviously Tex and being at Yankee Stadium.
That moment is probably...
The moment is I'm standing at Yankee Stadium, you know, it's like a childhood dream come true and doing this. And you too on my birthday, which, you know, was the craziest.
We didn't talk about that last time, did we?
I don't remember. I don't remember anything, Jerry.
I listened. No, and that, you know what's sad? I listened to our whole first episode because I wanted to tell the Tom Brady sucks ball story again. And literally at the very end, we did talk about that already. The U2 episode, which...
U2, I mean, was... I had written a scene at Dodger game, and the Dodgers or Major League Baseball wouldn't clear it. So... In one of my angry rants where I just yell at random people and say, why aren't you doing what you're supposed to do? I go, Burns, you know Bono. Why don't you stop fucking around and go get U2 on the show? And I mean, it was so... It's not that ridiculous now because of all the cameos after, but at that point it was
season two we're absurd. Talking.
Yeah, but it's like season two hasn't even started. So we've had season one, I don't even know who we've had on the show, but not that many cameos.
Gary Busey.
You know, Gary Busey, Lamar Odom.
And Scarlett Johansson at the end.
Scarlett Johansson that was a coup. That was a real coup. But I never imagined in a million years. And Burns, he's like, okay. I'm like, yeah,
oh
okay,
my
whatever.
God.
And then he calls up, he's like, they're in. I'm like,
just like that?
In?
Yeah.
I'm like, so, and now the crazy thing, and I have two great Bono stories because, so I go, they're in. So what does that mean? What will they do? He's like, I don't know, but they're in, you know? So I'm like, well, do I talk to Bono? Do I get on? Whatever. So
it's the greatest jigsaw puzzle of all time. What are they willing to do?
So it's the greatest thing. I never actually, Bono's been on the show twice. I've never spoken to him or met him. And... which is the only person... Actually, Scarlett, I wasn't there for that either because we shot that out of New York.
Those are the only two you don't have photos with.
Yeah, I don't have photos with them, so we can't post this. So I go... We changed the whole story of the episode in a day, basically, to make it Drama's birthday, and he wants these U2 tickets, and I am like, oh, this is great. Drama's Irish, U2. I'm like, I'm going to put them in the Irish flag. The only thing I get back from like the U2 camp is... they don't like the thing with the Irish flag. And I'm so confused right now because everything they
Aren't
do is with the Irish flag and all of this. And then a day before it comes back, they do love the Irish flag and Bono will say something. And on stage, I'm like, what?
You must have thought you were getting lied to.
I don't even know what's going on, but I changed the whole story to this birthday story for Drama just so I can get Bono to say happy birthday. But they don't tell us when he's going to say it. And the way we filmed that, as you remember, we have six cameras around the
arena. Mini mags. They get like the smallest possible film cameras that they could sneak in. Now, no one in the crowd knows what's going on. No one knows what Entourage really is at this point.
No one knows what Entourage is. We have no permission to be on the floor. We are told if we put a camera on the floor,
we're dead.
We're dead and get out and you're done. And I am working on a sidekick at that point, which is
that's right. T-Mobile side. Who's in your fave five?
You know? A phenomenal device. But I'm being told by the camera guys when they can see you guys and when they can't. And the crowd could care less that we're trying to film this. They want to see the
and
U2 concert.
And we're on the floor and we're inching our way up slowly.
Inching our way up and we have no idea whether Bono is going to say anything or not. And
I just didn't believe, if I'm being honest, at this moment when you told, I was prepared for a long night of paying attention and not getting any results.
So was I. And right. I'm also, you know, I'm also, without mentioning any of the cast members, all of them started drinking, and everybody's drinking and having a great
we're
time.
We're at a concert with no dialogue, if ever a time.
And Dylan will deny this, but I know it's true. I was there. I mean, Bono says, Feliz Cumpleaños.
Feliz Cumpleaños.
You know what I'm saying?
He goes, hey, Johnny Drama.
Yeah, hey, Johnny
Feliz
Drama.
Feliz Cumpleaños.
He says it in Spanish, because I finally got them to say, he'll say happy birthday. He says it in Spanish, and as the lights are fading down, I have no idea if the cameras see anybody, but I'm like, I turn around, and the guys aren't together, and I go, Dylan, and I turn around, and I think he could deny it only once. He's pissing in a cup, okay? That's what I think, and I'm like, yo, you guys got to get together and pretend it just happened. Hug each other. Go bananas, whatever.
So, I never heard that story before.
Listen, he swears it's not true, and maybe I've made it up. It's possible.
You know, I've never heard that in 12 years of knowing you guys.
The whole thing was so surreal. And by the way, I'm drinking too at this point.
We're all drinking. It's your birthday.
It's my birthday, and U2 is, you know, my favorite band. And like, we're shooting my show at the U2 concert. The whole thing is so freaking surreal. And Bono actually says this.
I was shocked that he said it.
It's also, though, as the lights are fading at the end of song one, and all I'm thinking is, there's no way we got this on film. It faded. And when you see it, it's so freaking magical and insane, which it was a Friday night, and we didn't see it till Monday. And the amount of people who were like, oh, you looped that, it's not real. It's real.
It is all real. Look, and if you look, guys, everyone, girls listening at home, watch that episode and just, you don't have to squint. You will see Doug plain as day. Right, you're right behind that. You're in the shot, right?
I'm in the shot.
You're in the shot.
I don't even know it. And then, you know, we got it, and it was incredible.
Thank God you were down there, because Dylan might have just pissed in that cup forever. Would you say we owe a lot? The Staples Center's been good to us, is that like? When we go to the Laker game, is that the Lakers or is that Staples? Like, the U2 thing was U2 and Staples,
yeah,
right?
Staples has been great to us. The Lakers have been great to us. And obviously U2. I mean, you know, we've been very fortunate. You know, LA as a whole, this city has been amazing.
Very good to us.
Been very, very good to us. And even the Ivy that we illegally shot at never gave us a hard time about it. So we've had some great luck. And then do you want to go into, like, seven seasons later?
Yes,
or
yes.
Six seasons later.
Full circle.
Season eight, U2 again. We get Matt Damon on the show, which was incredible, and he was unbelievable. And he tells me that Bono's going to do this thing, and he's going to have a iChat conversation with him. So we shoot
recurring character, yeah. Bono.
Yeah, we shoot Matt Damon talking to Bono on a computer screen, which you shoot it blank, and then we'll shoot Bono later, and we'll figure it out. And Matt finishes up and raps and is really, I think, one of the nicest cameos we had, and easygoing and all this.
Like, he did like extra work, not literally like as an extra. Like, he put in extra. He like shot stuff. That montage is awesome.
He was
awesome.
Absolutely incredible. But the only thing he didn't do was tell me what to do about Bono after he left.
He didn't give you any instructions.
There was no instructions. There's no call Bono here.
Finding Bono.
You know, and I'm back looking for Brian Burns and this and that. But anyway, we can't get in touch with anybody.
And this is the pinnacle moment of season six, right? In that episode, because it was the finale of season six, I believe, right?
Yeah. I believe it's the
finale. Because LeBron's in it as well. Yeah. They're going on the plane. Is that the episode?
Yes. Yes.
So it's the pinnacle of season six, you would
say. We're 10 days away from the thing airing, or 15 days. Like, we need it done, and we have no Bono and no way to talk to him. And randomly, you know who comes into this, but randomly, Tom Brady's buddy, who helped get us Tom Brady, a guy named Will McDonough, he tells me he's going to Dublin for the U2 concert and says, give me the script, I'll get it done. I'm like,
so at this point, there's no, like, Matt Damon said it, but there's no one has a line into
no
Bono.
No one is getting in touch with anybody. I mean, Matt Damon might as well have been back.
Are you looking at villains at this point? Are you going to have to reshoot Matt Damon stuff?
Yeah, because Matt is talking to Bono. There's no way we can change it. And Matt might as well be Born Identity at the beginning when he's in the water, because I can't get in touch with him. I can't get in touch with anybody. And I'm going, okay.
Showrunner 101 right here. Easy stuff.
I have no idea what to do. And Will McDonough says, give me the script. I'm going to Ireland, to Dublin tomorrow there for the U2 concert. I will get it done. Which
it's
is
insane.
The stupidest thing I've ever heard. But I'm like,
we gonna throw it at him and there's a paper airplane?
Here's the script. Okay, 3 days later, with my panic setting in, 4 a.m., I wake up with an email from Will McDonough. And they went and shot this thing like backstage at the U2 concert. I have no idea how Will pulls this off, but it gets crazier than that.
Jesus.
Now, nobody spoke to them. And what you really can understand about directing, interpreting scripts, which I understand Entourage is not Shakespeare, although we were nominated for a bunch of Emmys and Writer Guild Awards. But
that
is
true.
I know we're not Shakespeare, but you can interpret things very differently. So I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, he got it. And I start playing it, and there comes Bono and his backstage, except Bono, who honestly is one of my idols. So I'm saying this with love, but he's doing something out of Star Wars. He's doing Darth Vader, and he's talking to Vince, and he is going, Vince, I am your father, essentially, you know? Gosh. And I go into a full-blown
panic
attack.
So now you have an unusable Bono clip.
There is no way it could be used. No way, no how.
It would make sense. It would be a different show.
Yeah, it would be a different show. They wouldn't be talking to each other, and you know. Oh my God. So I'm emailing Will. I'm like, I need 5 minutes on the phone with Bono. We can reshoot this in 5 minutes. Because they were nice enough to get all their great camera people, whoever were there, and they shot it, and it was beautiful.
So It looked great.
It sounded great.
And the one thing you didn't need it to do was look good, because it was an eye. It was an eye chat or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you always want it to look.
Of course, good, but
I just needed to sound right. Right. You know? So I wrote. You know, I hate writing, and I wrote like a 2-page letter
to Bono,
going, "This is like the worst thing I've ever done because you were so nice enough to do this, and now I have to say I cannot use it and this and that." And I sent it with all this trepidation and freaking out. And 4 hours later, I have a new one that's perfect, on the money,
what a guy.
Done. And And for all those idiots who got mad about U2 giving you a free album, what the fuck? I mean, take it off your phone. You know,
I didn't catch on to this until much later.
These people were angry like a virus had been sent. You got a free U2 album.
Just in your phone from the cloud, right? Is that what happened? Yeah. I caught on to the story late.
You don't like it, don't play it. But anyway, I love it and was very happy for the gift and for that email that day. So,
God, so Yankee Stadium, U2. I mean, I'm trying to think because like, you can't pick moments.
There's so many. And again, it's like, you know.
What's your favorite? And I think this is, we have a lot of, we've reached out to people on Twitter, so we do have some good questions for you from the audience. And also, for those of you, if you are not following Doug on Twitter and Instagram, Doug has the most amazing Entourage photo library, obviously, that it's just the sickest thing. Like, you could literally say, Doug, let's see, the only one he doesn't have a picture of is Bono, but you could literally ask him for a picture of anyone, he could post it. Anyway, Mr. Doug Allen, at Mr. Doug Allen on both?
Yes, at Mr. Doug Allen, yeah.
On both.
I have
so
Bono.
So follow
pictures,
him if you're not, but if you're listening to this, you probably are. Not with us. You have pictures of Bono.
Yeah, and I've.
But of all. I don't want to say because, like, if you look at like the road trips, and I guess you would call a road trip would be Sundance, Hawaii, which we cheated for Mexico when Vince is on the run, New York, which was a road episode. You could even maybe figure Joshua Tree a little bit, although that wasn't a great destination to go to. It was a great episode. Do you have a favorite, out of LA episode? We know the Yankee Stadium shoot was phenomenal, and that's a standalone.
Yeah.
I go to Sundance only because it was the first one, first time he really left town.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a favorite episode because I really do think those are some of our best.
Or a favorite trip.
You got Vegas.
Oh, that's right. Vegas.
Sundance, New York.
Vegas.
Cannes. Joshua Tree. And those are really.
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Mexico.
Right.
We shot in Hawaii for Mexico.
You just can't shoot. Well, you can't. I mean, it's just you're crossing the international borders. Yeah.
So it's a whole crazy thing. But Sundance was a special week, you know, because we were there for a while. And
only time I've ever been to Sundance in my life. I swore after I'd never come back unless I have a movie there. And I haven't had a movie there since.
And it was just, you know, like, the other ones were really difficult trips. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And kind of. You know, it was really like being with your boys and on a trip and just having a good time. And, you know, that shot, walking up Main Street, ending with Adrian's terrible snowball throw that he
missed. It was like all one shot.
I mean, it was all one shot. And Adrian missed Jeremy's head the first time, I think. But,
and I think we only had like 2 runs at it because this is also a time where it was very difficult early on. You could attest to it better than I can, but just logistically being able to we weren't getting permits as easily as we could. I'm sure locations weren't dying
by the beginning. By the way, even now,
it's still not easy.
We're going to do one more shoot to hopefully add something special for this movie we're going to do in January. But we're right back to, you know, we shoot with real people standing there and talking, and they can say whatever they want. And, you know, when we walk through Vegas, all of a sudden, Turtle had become this star. I mean, so people are screaming Turtle when they're not supposed to know who Turtle is. He's the Vince's friend, but they're going, Turtle, Turtle. So we shot live at Laker Stadium, you know, live at Staples Center with the game going on, with all the noises there. And the Sundance and Cannes things were two of the obviously most difficult things because you can't do it over. And Sundance, it was just a special shot. It was one of our most amazing kind of achievements. And that whole week was just, there was a lot of emotional stuff going on. I had a death in the family when that week was going on. And just being with everybody there was, it was just amazing. And I love the episode, obviously. So
it's one of my favorite episodes. I do look to the, and I still don't know how to say it, and you made a great bit about it in the show, can or con. I still don't know what the proper way is. That was the first time I ever left the country.
Right.
I had not left the country at that point. I was not a well... I haven't really left... If you count Cabo and Canada, I mean, I've left a couple of times.
I tried to get this guy on a free trip to Italy, Greece, Turkey. I mean, I know he doesn't need the money, but I mean, this trip was so set up and...
It's before you, Bree. Don't worry about it. No, I'm kidding.
All of the listeners of Jerry
like,
need
what?
To convince him.
I mean, Bree's like, what?
The fact that Jerry hasn't taken her to Italy.
No, I want to go to
Italy. Specifically is so insane. And
so insane.
And honestly, we'll get to that, but Florence is the greatest place on earth. So.
Well, I had never left the country at this point, and we had
but he wants to go to space.
I do want to go to space. We'll talk about that. Interstellar changed my life in terms of just... I thought
the
movie was good. I am obsessed now with space and science. And it's kind of, you know what? First thing I've really learned that I didn't know how to do already in my 30s. Like, this is like, I'd say getting in shape, and now space is something I've actually learned about.
All right, well, just for sake of your relationship, I'd go to Italy,
first before I go to before space. I go to Titan, the moon planet of Saturn. So, look, I wasn't a great flyer. I'm still not great, although I'm a lot better. I mean, I fly 50 times a year because I really love going back to New York to see my niece and nephew and family. So, I am better. But back then, I hadn't left the country. I did have some flying issues. I mean, I didn't even have a passport at this point.
Yeah.
So, I remember, and Doug, you know, the episode is written. It's great. We have, like, one shot at this epic scene in at the Cannes Film Festival. I think it was like the tail end of the Ocean. It was either Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 13 premiere. Right. And just so you know, if you go back and watch that episode out there, like every camera and the hundreds, if not thousands, of fans and paparazzi you see, those aren't extras. They were literally photographing George Clooney 5 minutes before we get out of the car. So circle back maybe a week before that. Now I went, I got my passport like a good little soldier, and we're like a week outside of leaving for the 14-hour flight that I'm terrified of. And I remember like, all right, let me get my passport out.
Suddenly Jerry's passport disappears.
And guys, I swear, we're not going to get into the details of what I actually think happened to the passport. That's for another time, another forensic report. Yeah. I do have theories.
Well, by the way, there was one thing. I always wanted to do the lie detector episode where the guys have a lie detector party, because I never, and I love
that'd
Jerry.
Be a lie detector party is a great idea.
And I trust Jerry like a brother, but I always believed he was so scared of that plane that he maybe subconsciously lost the passport. I don't know. Only Jerry
knows. Was recovered years later. I told you that.
No.
It was recovered years later behind my washer dryer.
Okay.
I'll tell you off the air how I think it got there. But we're going to leave that for off the air.
Oh, I know how it got there now.
But on the air, I'm like, all right, you know what? I haven't seen the passport. Let me just take everything out. We're leaving in like 5 days. It might have even been 3 days. Right. And I'm looking where I think it is, and it's not there. And I'm just looking all over the house. It's not there. I'm like, God, that's strange. All right, you know what? Maybe it's in my car. I look in my car. Now I'm panicked. It's like midnight, and we do have some shooting in L.A. to do before we leave. So I get to work. I might have been off that next day, so I continued to look. Now it's literally like Thursday. We're leaving Saturday morning. And I go into work, and I remember I tell you, and you're like, come on, ha-ha. I think you thought I was joking with you.
I did.
But you also know how terrified I of flying am. Now it's just a panic. The ADs from the show are searching my trailer, my car. Vern came to one of our ADs, who then went on to become first AD, is searching my... He's in my house.
Yeah.
He's in my... Because no one... He's in my friggin' house. No passport. Now we're about 40 hours away from the flight. 7 o'clock in the morning when the federal building downtown opens up, Vern and I went, and literally, I think HBO paid. I know I didn't pay. Someone, maybe you paid and you don't even know it. Probably. Someone paid like $1,500 for me, and I cut the line and I got a passport expedited, and it was getting, they said it would be ready at 4 o'clock. Gary Goldman's like, we'll get it for you and we'll bring it to you at the airport. No one would let me bring it home. I went to the airport without my passport. I was greeted
in a straitjacket, by the way,
and someone handed me the passport, and so I got on. And then years later, when I moved out of the place I was living at the time, when they pulled the washer dryer out, it was behind the washer dryer.
And I believe you, because I had a night. I just went up to Seattle for the Giants Seahawks game.
That's all my notes. I always have pages of notes. No, meaning like I do want to get to that. So let's wrap. So the can episode, if everyone wants to go watch like that episode, that was one take. Why are you laughing, Bray?
Just cut Doug off.
No, that was one. Look at that. For those of you who don't know, Bree's laughing at me. Jersey. I did cut Doug off, and then Bree just broke her microphone.
I like it over here.
It's a good podcast.
Luke the cat is here. Luke the cat has taken Luke, my son's place at the Sal Asante chair.
This is not their first appearance on the podcast, believe it or not. You know what? You know who's now banned from the studio?
Who
we had on once? Mike Young. Why? Deathly allergic to cats. He's like, great, now I could never come back. Yeah, Mike Young will not be back on the Bad for Business podcast because he's deathly allergic to cats. Do you know someone brought a cat into goal one time?
No.
I only heard this secondhand. Like, Mike Young's in a booth with all the boys. Goal's a great sports bar in West Hollywood. They're all watching the game, and like out of nowhere, Mike just like starts like coughing, eyes swell up, and there's like a lady at the bar who had like a cat.
It's cat allergies are pretty crazy. I have a sidebar that's mildly interesting, entertainment related, but
let's do it.
I went to visit David Schwimmer when he was shooting the movie 6 Days, Seven Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan Reitman directing, Harrison Ford.
You go back with Schwimmer, right?
I go back with Schwimmer. He was on the show as well. Michael Chapman, cinematographer, one of the greats of all time. Raging Bull is the cinematographer. And David's girlfriend comes to my house first, and she plays with my cat. And then we go to the set, and this is a big movie. Shooting in somewhere in Beverly Hills, and this is a big movie, and I'm going to set, and David's girlfriend goes and kisses him. They're doing the scene. It's him and Harrison Ford.
Oh my God.
And I sort of, all of a sudden I see Michael Chapman goes, what's happening to his face?
And oh my God.
10 minutes later, production is shut down because of my cat. I mean, his face blew up and the production was down, and everyone's like, does David have any allergies? And I just see his girlfriend look and go, cats? And
So she played with the cat.
She played with the cat.
Brought the virus.
Brought the cat virus.
Kissed him. Yeah. It said good luck. And then he went and his face blew up.
His face blew up, you know. Not like mask type of stuff.
Unshootable, you know, though.
Unshootable to Michael Chapman's eye, at least, and Ivan Reitman's.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yes, let's move on, because I think we have to do the mid advertisement, Brie. Is that right? Is it time?
Yep.
All right, we got to talk to you about some sponsors, or a sponsor right here that's helping us out the podcast. And like I always say, I don't ever have a product on here that I haven't tried. So here we go. This is Dollar Shave Club, everybody. Is there anything worse than buying razors? You got to remember that you need them in the first place. Then you got to sit in traffic to the store. You got to find that locked plastic fortress that they keep them in. And then find the one guy who has the key, who's usually back texting his girlfriend or doing something else besides helping you. And then after all that, it's going to set you back like $25. Well, never do that again by joining DollarShaveClub.com. For a few bucks a month, DollarShaveClub.com delivers great razors right to your door, okay? Their plans start at $3 a month. Signing up takes about 2 minutes, and then you sit back and the blades just show up like clockwork. You could have a fresh blade every single week. There's no memberships, no commitment, and they have a money-back guarantee, so you really have nothing to lose by trying them out. I did. I recently had to start shaving my face for something that didn't end up working out, but now I have free razors, and I'm not going to the store to get them. So stop going to the store and buying overpriced razors. It's dollarshaveclub.com/B4B. All right, we're going to get into some of my, hours and hours of research for notes. First and foremost, I think we can announce this. If not, we'll cut it, but there is a Entourage, the movie, trailer or
teaser that I saw for the first time last night and just showed you.
I saw it. I did.
Yeah, and I'm excited. Warner Brothers did a great job. It looks like a big movie, you know. And I'll keep saying it just so everyone knows. We're not a high budget movie. We did this movie at a very reasonable cost, and it looks big and it looks good. And the guys, as Connelly said last night, everybody has never looked better. Everyone looks great. I think they took Jerry's lead. You know, we couldn't let Turtle have the best body in the movie, so they're all looking great.
Can I say one? Can I leak one part of the trailer? And it's not really going to leak all that much.
I don't know.
Well, we'll cut it. Make a note. Okay, we're at 36 minutes and 27 seconds. We'll cut it. There's a former fat joke. Can I say that?
Sure.
That gives away a little bit.
No, I don't even know. I don't know. We should. We'll.
Let's just cut it. All right. Star that. Make a note. Don't circle that one.
I think what we should say is there's a lot of. I think it'll really bring in new people. And it'll have some insight for the fans who like the show.
It's coming soon, right? You don't know exactly when.
It's gotta be. We're coming soon now. You know what's crazy is, you know, we were so far away. I would say to people we're coming out in June, and they would look at me like I was kidding. And now when I say it, they're like, "Wow, soon!"
And now you're getting the close. Yeah, I remember that too.
Now I'm getting nervous. So.
Back in January, whenever we were shooting March, I don't remember.
January we started.
In people asking, "Well, when's it coming out?" June of 2015. Like, I might be dead by then. Yeah, exactly. No one thought they were gonna make it. Now I guess it's they moved it up. Now it was June 12th.
June 5th.
Now it's June 5th, so we are not colliding with it. All right, I like that. June 5th's a good day. June's a good month for me.
Yeah.
June's a good month. I don't know why. I just feel that way.
Yeah, D-Day happened in June, but we won't talk about
that. Well, I wasn't around for that, so it doesn't really pertain. No. All right, yeah, we'll cut that too. 37-48. That means nothing. We're going to leave it all in. Okay, first and foremost, the last time we left off with you, we were literally getting ready for When the Garden Was Eaten to come out. Mm-hmm. And now, obviously, I was talking about your Instagram. You have a picture with Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
I read all his books. Obviously, I'm just as insane of a Knicks fan as you. I had the Knicks-Bucks game on. It was, like, tied at the end of the first quarter. The Knicks are sucking awfully. But, like, what do you say to Phil Jackson? Like, that's a guy I would kind of be like,
I mean, you know what?
I wouldn't really know what to say.
He puts you so at ease. And, you know, at first it was like we were told he could only sit for about a half an hour. And
because of his various injuries, right?
Injuries and time commitments, whatever it was. And we interviewed him for 3.5-4 hours. And I think he really enjoyed it. And he was just great. And he's great in the doc. He's a really nice guy. And there's so much more footage of him talking. And the stories were so interesting. And, you know, when he's on that Knicks team, he's not Phil Jackson yet. You know, he's coming off the bench.
Sharp elbows.
He's a guy who was averaging, though, 28 points a game in college and then has spinal fusion surgery in 1969. So who knows what kind of player he could have been, but he still was a very, very good and the energy of that team. And, you know, this genius that was going to come out. And it was amazing. That whole experience of making that movie, which, you know, Michael Rapaport, you know, I got to really do what producing can be, which is great. I found a book, I got the director, and then I got to give my advice, but I really got to sit back and watch and be awed by everything we were doing, because these were my heroes, even though they predate me by a little bit. I grew up with that knowledge of that team. And
that's what everyone was still probably talking about. Like, the older generation for you was probably talking about that great Knicks team, you know?
Absolutely. So it was cool, you know? And I wore my best suit that Domenico.
I saw the suit.
Who makes
purple
Jeremy's
tie,
shoes.
Is it? Or
I
a
wore
pink
a purple tie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought I looked good. And then Clyde Frazier shows up.
Well, you can't outdo Clyde, man.
Suit, and I'm like, wow, I look terrible. I'm going to go home.
So. How is Clyde? Because I met Clyde once, and like, there's always a joke. Mike Breen kills him every time they're calling games. Like, Clyde has never seen a movie or a TV show in his life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's seen The Godfather or anything. Like, had no idea who I was, nor should he know who I was. And he kind of gave me the pie, like, hey, man, how you doing? Yeah,
they were all great. You know, we had everybody. And even, you know, Jerry West was willing to come on and talk about it and stuff. Tommy Heinsohn was the only one who hung up on Rappaport like 3 times, said, don't ever call me again about this. So,
wow.
He's still got some hostilities about that team, or I don't know what it was, but.
Well, it was captivating, and it just only made me long for the days of a good Knicks team.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the sad thing is everybody's on Phil and Derek now. There's no reason to expect they were going to be good this year. The plan is, and, you know, it's the tragedy of coming in early because then you start to get blamed, but I didn't expect them to be good this year. Nothing changed since last year.
I expected a slight improvement from last year, only because of how bad the East is. I expected to be the 7 or 8 seed.
I agree, and it's still early, but the truth is I was not even looking at this season. To me, it's a wash. We need to get some talent in there, and hopefully we will.
I'm going to tell you what I don't like, and this is going to go after some... And maybe I shouldn't comment. And maybe I just think actors should do this. I don't think athletes should do it. Mm. I don't like the losing weight. I don't like Carmelo losing weight. I don't like LeBron. I know Lev actually has this theory that when he, whatever athletes he's ever spoken to, the best thing an athlete could do as they hit 30 is lose some weight. That adds years. You never really saw Kobe do it. You saw, if anything, you saw Jordan put on a little muscle to get past the Pistons and all those physical. I don't like this. Everyone just look, LeBron, who's now playing out of his mind, and obviously I hate the overreactions of killing people after three games. It's just so stupid. Yeah. It's an 82 game season, but they just look tired and malnourished. I want the weight back.
By the way, it's funny that we're talking about this because when I saw that Jerry lost weight, I wanted to kill myself. And we talked, and I think I offered Jerry $100,000 in cash to put the weight back on, which makes me a horrible person because I didn't care about his health. I get
what you're saying. Like you built something. It's like saying you built the house and then I came in and redecorated
it. It's always, you know, sometimes it's hard with change. And I think it actually works infinitely better and really launches us into a new thing. But, you know, I used to wake up with nightmares of the poster and like, you need the fat guy. Like that's when we were casting for Turtle, it's like, it was the fat guy. It wasn't the funniest guy from New York that comes in. It's the funny fat guy that comes in. So all of a sudden Jerry, you know, is wants to wear a freaking wife beater in every scene. And, you know, we adjust.
At home,
he's got me.
And you know, we adjust on the fly. And as far as Carmelo, you know, I honestly am not even watching the Knicks game. Just like I say, it's a wash to me. LeBron is going to be LeBron.
So you're punting this season.
I'm punting
this
season.
Of...
And LeBron's going to be LeBron. And, you know, if we're going to talk sports at all, what I was worried about before.
Trying to get a prediction out of you, maybe. Where the Knicks finish and who's going to be in the finals.
The Knicks are not going to be good. Yeah, the Knicks are not going to be good. If Derrick Rose stays healthy, the Chicago Bulls are going to be in the finals. I don't know who they're playing. Spurs, Golden State looks real tough. I'm shocked that the Clippers look so bad. I'm really, really shocked. And Cleveland, who's got one of our great cameos too, K Love, who we had on before.
That's
when
right.
People are like,
we almost had the whole big
why
three
is he
from
on?
Cleveland.
I said, because wait till you see what this guy becomes.
Well, because he hadn't played an NBA game yet, I believe. Like, right, he graduated UCLA. Was he drafted? And it was getting ready. It was like the summer before his rookie season.
I think so. His first appearance, I believe so, yeah.
And Dylan, Kevin Dylan, who knows a lot about sports, but, like, not really names. Like, he knows all. Dylan's a savvy guy with sports. He's no dummy. But he didn't really know much about Kevin Love. And then that was the scene where Eminem beats up Vince.
Yeah.
And I think Kevin Love.
That was his second time on, I think.
Second time.
Yeah, so he was already in he was already blossoming. He was on.
Oh, there's a scene with
Office.
Scott Kahn.
Yeah.
Right.
Scott Kahn. So I think it was in between that rookie year, but I'm not positive. But I think Cleveland, Kevin Love is amazing. LeBron's amazing. But they need a shop. Like, they need Antonio Davis, and then they win 82 games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's sick, by the way. I think
he's the real deal.
The real, real deal.
Well, look, we don't have to spend too much time on basketball, but I do want to get... I made this point on the podcast, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, I think. Bree and I went to a Browns game. She's from the Cleveland area.
They just threw the whole season away. But anyway.
It doesn't look good after that loss. Yeah. But, you know... We go to Browns Raiders game. I'm in their house. Jay Glazer hooked me up a coach pet, all this great hook, and I wore a Browns hat. They're playing the Raiders, and the Browns are not a threat. I got killed on Twitter so hard for being traitorous scum and aren't I a Giants fan. Now, I bring it up to you because you were just recently in Seattle.
I just had one of the most difficult, you know,
but see, there's
things in my life. This is very difficult, and I can clear up because I don't have as many followers as you. follow me. I need followers. But people constantly say you're a traitor and you're this and that. And I can say it right now, plain and simple. My friends, I root to do well.
Yeah.
So, but I had the Giants situation. I flew up with Steve Tisch.
Seahawks, Giants.
And then I had Russell Wilson got me the ticket. So I'm in the box with Russell's friend.
So you got New York transportation, Seattle seating. That's a tough, that's an interesting spot.
And we come and we literally, and by the way, my girlfriend, who's just crazy, wants to wear a Russell jersey on the plane. And I said, you can't.
Oh, God.
And I am a true...
It's the Giants insignia is on the tail, right?
Yeah. And I am a true diehard Giant fan. But my girlfriend's like, Mr. Tisch won't be upset. I'm like, he's going to launch you out of this plane. So anyway, she doesn't wear it. But we go up and, you know, I mean, this is Entourage stuff that, you know, I haven't experienced. But, you know, we go up to the game and we have a police escort.
Escort.
You know? I mean, we're 14 minutes from the plane to the stadium. But we pull up into New York Giants territory and... we get out and we have our Seattle stuff.
Oh,
and the cop goes, the cop goes, I don't understand. Are you with the Giants or with the Seahawks? And like,
I don't know.
All the people on the Giants plane are looking at me like, I'm like,
traitor.
Well, I'm sitting with the Seahawks, but I'm with the Giants. But I got to tell you, I'm hoping Russell has a big game. I need him to, you know, I want
so
him
to. So, in an ideal world for you, it's 42-40, Giants win, Russell throws for 4 touchdowns and 400 yards, no picks. Is that your ideal scenario?
It's so hard to even say what ideal is because, you know, we don't want the Giant defense to be bad either. You know, I just want everyone to have a good game. I don't want anyone to get hurt. You know, we got Prince hurt. I mean, he wasn't even playing, which stinks. You know, but, you know, my ideal situation is I can't. You know, that game doesn't happen in my ideal situation because
is that you're there.
Yeah.
That's the most ideal situation.
And I can enjoy it. It was tough. I you know, I wanted them both to win, so it's hard. But, you know, everyone goes, how can you like Tom Brady? Well, Tom Brady showed up for us, you know, for $500 on a moment's notice when Eli Manning bailed on us, by the way, which makes it even more
difficult. I checked our first podcast because I didn't know if we fully told that story. We did at the end for a minute. We don't have to fully get back into it. But I will say it was devastating because that is your team, the fact that Eli and Peyton, specifically Eli, I believe, right? Or both of them, whatever, solicited you for that. And then only to have a Patriot swoop in and save the day, and that Patriot happens to be Tom Brady, who lets me mouth off to him in the scene.
Shows up with, you know, no crew, no nothing, just like, what time you want me there? I'm easy.
And it's like 2 months out of knee surgery.
And that's right. And then, of course, gets on the golf course. It's 40 degrees out, takes out a golf stick.
Drives the green.
Gets a hole-in-one, and we're all like, okay, we're not as good-looking as this guy, and we're not as cool either.
And he was, like, throwing, of course, some grip. It might have been Mark Christie. Someone, like, magically had a football that day. Next thing you know, he threw a couple of passes. It was just, it really was.
Which, by the way, was less magical on the movie when someone in the crew, and I honestly to this day have no idea who, but brought like 40 footballs, and while like we're trying to work, he's trying to get Tom to sign all these balls, and he's the nicest, most patient guy, and you know, but it was pretty uncomfortable. But he came back for the movie, so it's tough. But at this stage of my life, you know what, especially a regular season game, I want my friends to do well, especially the ones who've delivered for us, because, you know, it's not easy to get these guys to show up. We don't pay them anything, and they're really coming here because they're fans of the show or they're friends of ours, and you know, that's why LeBron. I'll always root for LeBron and Bosh, who, that was the one thing I was saying. I think that the Heat are going to have a much better season than people think, and I think Bosh, who was the most abused, in my opinion, Hall of Famer in the history of NBA basketball, is going
to
have a monster season.
He's off
and
to
show
a great
people
start.
Why they don't win without him last year, or I mean 2 years ago, or the win before.
You're
they
absolutely
don't,
right.
They don't win, and they talk about this guy who really sacrificed his own stats to be the guy who could facilitate. But you know, I think the thing that, like I said, Cleveland, they need a big guy who can do all those things that he does. So
you made me I say an alt when Chris Bosh did the show because they were like a week shy of free agency opening that big year, the year LeBron signed with the Heat, obviously. And we did the one, I think that's in the episode, where it's like, you should have signed with the Knicks. Yeah. And then there was the one where we were like praising him because he didn't know where he probably deep down.
Talk about
knew.
Being around changing sports history. I mean, you know, Bosh told me he thought him and LeBron might very well be Knicks. And I, you know, I'm not gonna say I'm the fan I was when I was a kid, because I don't get that emotionally invested as much anymore. But I was invested and believed that they were coming and that I was gonna watch my son watch the next decade of historic Knicks basketball. I really believed that was gonna happen. So that was really devastating.
But one of the coolest moments I've ever seen in my life, and you were there because you literally did a scene with me, but you played a different character when we had Mark Cuban on the show. We had Mark Cuban on the day of the eve of the opening of free agency. So essentially it's
LeBron's
Christmas
first time
Eve.
Out of Cleveland.
We're going back to Bosh, the big three in Miami, that whole crazy summer. So we had Bob Odenkirk, who's unbelievable. Great day of shooting. Like, we shot all of Mark Cuban's coverage first because he was basically saying, like, guys, midnight on the East Coast, it opens up. So I'm allowed to roll calls at 9 o'clock.
If he wanted LeBron at 9 o'clock.
Dude, we literally were shooting. And now it's like 8:45 and we're finishing his coverage. I don't even know if we fully have it. Like, we have it, but I'm sure we could have used a few more. And he like gave the point. And I literally was like, I went over, I'm like, Mark, who are you going to call first? And he wouldn't tell me. Yeah. He would not tell me. And sure enough, 8:58, he grabbed his cell phone, bounced, said, guys, I love you. Thank you. Had a great time. Was gone. And then they turned the camera on me, and it was a single of me. So you played Mark's role. You did all of Mark's dialogue. Yeah. The only time I'll excuse an actor for not sticking around for his off camera when you're calling LeBron and Dirk.
By the way, I wanted to stop filming because I was more interested in hearing that call and being around for that. And Mark was actually very like letting us in.
I still email him every now and then from time to time, asking if I could intern as like a GM.
He's the best, you know. I mean, when I ask him, you know, if he wants to be in the movie, he's like, yeah, whatever you need. You want me to bring a plane, a boat, whatever you want. You know, I went down. I brought J.J. Watt actually down to Shark Tank set.
That's,
you know,
Bree's guy.
Just
loves J.J. Watt. It's funny. He's just he really likes the show too. I feel like he would have loved to be on at some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, scheduling didn't work out. So if we can get him in the second one, I mean, and, you know, what's cool is I met J.J. and Russell, you know, before they were in the NFL.
Ties with Russell, it's not like Doug met Russell at the Super Bowl party. You know, like Doug goes back to, you go back to Wisconsin with him when he was a transfer, you know.
And we took him out the day he came to L.A. when he was a third round pick and nobody.
And two Altoons kid, I remember, was out. Nick,
and, you know, we took him out and. You know, nobody knew, and Russell is not a big guy. I remember we were at goal, and everyone's like, "Who's this?" I'm like, "He's Seattle Seahawks quarterback," and he's, you know, he's
we were hoping he's gonna
wider,
get drafted.
He's wider and thicker than Jerry, but he doesn't look that much bigger sitting at a table, you know. And you know, those two guys too, who are, you know, to me on their way to the Hall of Fame, both of them are. They're such nice, great guys, and you know, and that's to me more important than the uniforms they're wearing, you know?
I agree. And I also, my philosophy, and I'll stick to it, and this is the last time I'll say it to everyone out there on Twitter who wants to hate. When you're a guest in someone's house, I show respect. And it was Browns Raiders. I was a guest of the Browns, so I put the freaking hat on. Yeah. If it were Browns Giants, I would probably go neutral if they're hosting me. Now, if I'm going strong, I mean, what were you wearing at the Giants Seahawks game?
By the way.
What were you wearing? The truth, Doug. It's on Instagram somewhere, so I'll find it.
Well, I was wearing giant underoos. you know what happened was it's what would happen. I want to say two things, but one, I'm going to sell Jerry down the river because
I don't think I like where this is going. Mark it down. 58, 54. We're cutting it. Doug, don't say it. I'll cut it out. I swear to God. I'll cut it out. Don't just
say it.
No. Let's let that die. Please don't say it. Right. Please. Well, let it die.
At the Giant game.
Don't you tell.
No, I won't tell that. I'll pass on that. And they're going to come after you and want to know the answer.
It's good. It's good fodder.
And that was really when we were like putting on a different uniform was a really big deal. It's not so much to me anymore than it was 10 years ago. But at the Seahawk game, it starts to pour. And they hand out Seahawk ponchos, like plastic bags or whatever. And we're wearing them. And Maddie, my girlfriend, also had already bought a Seahawk hat. She's got a picture. Maddie gets into it. The Blitz, the Seahawk bird, jumped into our seat to take a picture with her. So she's got a big picture with Blitz that's on Instagram. Sick. And I'm like, and honestly, Steve Tisch, again, without second, is such a great guy and such a nice guy. And it's also in the movie. And I love him and the Giants. Even if he owned the Steelers, I would love him, which, you know, whatever. So, but after the game ends, where we're parked in the Giants area, we now can't get back. They're telling us we can't get back.
And you got a giant Seahawk.
And here comes Steve Tisch. And of course, my girlfriend's like, Steve. And I'm like, I swear, I run to rip this Seahawk poncho off my body, which I don't want anyway. And it's boring. I'm going, shh. You know, and
that's awesome.
He still let us.
He still flew you home.
Yeah, no, we didn't fly home with him. We stayed.
Right. Seattle's a great city. That's the one city.
Seattle and
San Fran. I've never been, and I've always.
I have been lucky enough. 6 days in Seattle in the winter with no rain. It's absolutely amazing.
That might not
amazing.
Have ever happened before.
Best clam chowder on earth. That the Pike. I don't know. I think it's Pike clam chowder. I mean, I love Seattle. Now I know. I hate the rain, so I know if it was raining, I wouldn't. But I've been there. There's hikes over the city. Incredible. You should go there. Jerry's got a lot of places to take Brie, and it's.
But I've gotten a lot better as I've grown, and I.
Well, where have you gone? How have you gotten better? I mean,
where have we New gone? York, well, we went to Miami, but Cleveland. That we had a shoot. We went to Cleveland. We go to New York a lot.
Santa Barbara.
I mean, I think you should take her to
that was
Italy
a big step.
For New Year's. Take her.
But see, here's my thing. I want to go for like 2 weeks. Don't you think it's a little bit short notice to plan a great 2 week trip for New Year's, which is not even eight weeks away?
Not for a young man with your kind of money. I mean, the spring is a great, obviously the best time to go when the weather's a little warmer, but it's amazing. I mean, I'm not trying to get out of Italy. I'm dying to go.
I want to start at the top and I want to end in the
Trust
village
me,
in
Jerry,
Sicily.
Jerry will call me. He'll be in Little Italy in New York. And
Doug,
Christmas.
I'm here.
Yeah. No. Listen.
I'm about to order a cappuccino.
Yeah, listen to these accents.
You got a few more. Are you good with time so far? Are you holding up all right?
Yeah, as long as Lucas doesn't come screaming, I'm all good.
All right. Well, 6:38. I'll get you out of here.
Don't worry about it.
I did get a lot. These aren't questions, but I got a lot of people wanting to know where this episode of the show came from. And it was funny. I actually had Josh from Fat Sal's in here working on something. And he went over to where I have the sneakers. And you know what I mean when I say the sneakers, which the episode where Vince buys me the Fukijamas and gold. Now, go back into your memory files of what inspired that? Because people should know you're not necessarily a sneakerhead, but you've always collected. You're not like a wait online for overnight, but you know about sneakers.
But I didn't know too much about sneakers then. I mean, Weiss, you know, is kind of like, but you don't know sneaker culture, bud? What are you, stupid?
And does he really know? Because I've never seen Weiss with a pair of Jordans or Air Force Ones in my life.
I'm not sure. You know, Rob's got good style, so I don't know what his thing is. But I have like 400 pairs of sneakers now. And I couldn't tell you any of the names, so I'm not like that. I just like if they...
You have a good collection.
If they look good, you know, whatever. But
he's rocking good ones.
But Rob said we should look into that. So then we started looking into it, and then I started finding out about this stuff, and then Nike was willing to come in and give us, you know, their best designer to help us make this shoe, and you know, it became a very cool episode. So
yeah, I've put the sneakers on Instagram a couple of times. I always get a crazy amount of likes. So Josh from Fat Sal's is your target audience with that episode. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the guy who has to get the sneakers the minute they come out. And it's so weird. Like, I show it. And anytime I've had someone in here, it's the biggest talking point in this whole friggin' apartment. They look at that, and if they know anything about sneakers, their jaw drops. And then, I mean, for those of you at home, like, and you have a pair. There was a pair made for the five guys in you and Lev. Is that right? Like, the artist for Nike made, Mark Smith, like, will literally kind of interview you casually, ask you some kind of offbeat, weird questions, like, did you ever get caught smoking pot or whatever? Right. And he has this technology where he has a laser that burns into the leather of the sneaker, and it's like written in code. It's like a Da Vinci code of your life. So I just wanted to answer that for a few people who wanted to know. That's the episode I get hit with a lot, was the sneaker. And I actually disappoint people because I'm like, I was a bit of a sneakerhead when I was a kid. Then I stopped. Then that kind of reinstarted me. That's not really a word. And it was Scott Freeman who came up to me. And when I started losing weight and was like, Air Force One and fat kid shoes, you got to switch over to SBs. So you can't wear those anymore. You lost weight. I didn't even know that's a thing.
I actually tried to get you into the cooler sneakers as the during the show. You were a little resistant. Jerry likes what he likes. You know,
At that point in time, I was like that. Because I, yes. But
he's grown up. Thanks to Brie.
Do Do you want to answer some Twitter questions that yes, we put it out yes, and Facebook questions?
Yes, all I right, do.
Let me see.
Yes, I do.
Here, I'm going to find some good ones for Doug. All right, well, this one's a friendly one. I'm not going to read this guy's name. I'll read it next because then he just, and this is a little bit self-serving, obviously, but one guy wants to know what the best part about working with me was and then what was the worst. And be honest, Doug.
The
be
best
honest,
part is Jerry and I used to eat together all the time. The worst is now I have to eat alone. And
well
I'm
played.
A fat slob now. Well, you know, I mean, you know, Jerry and I, Jerry was like my little brother, you know, and Jerry, when Lev introduced me to him the first time, I mean, Jerry looked like he was 12, and there was just no reason that he would be on the show with Kevin Dillon being his friend from high school, even if he was his older friend, even if he was 2 years older, even if, it just didn't make any sense. And so I've got, you know, for me, you know, really, you know, I love all the guys, but me, you and Connolly, it's like you would have been my guys in high school. Like yes. We would have the same crew. Also, Jerry and I, weirdly enough, Jerry and I have a lot of similarities, and Connolly and I have a lot of similarities, even though I think Jerry and Kevin are very different. I kind of have those both, you know, you know, neurotic stuff a little bit and whatever, you know. So, I mean, it was just all of it was like being with your buddy, even if we had disagreements with stuff. It just, you know.
Okay, well, now I'll say his name. This is off of Twitter. His name is Richard Molinaro, who has about 9 questions. I'm only reading the 2, and they're all good, but I'm trying to pick. And he goes by The Most King 4 on Twitter. He says, what are the chances, Doug, that this show would have worked on a network?
0.
What, he says, what would have to change, and could you be on as honest as possible?
It's 0. You know what? It's I realize, sadly, you know, my mother really, I didn't curse in my house ever. Ever, ever, ever.
I wasn't really allowed to do much of that.
And I realize now I'm a foul-mouthed animal. And,
and it's through the reflection of the show.
Yeah. And, you know, just the dialogue, obviously, to me, the dialogue is very important to this show. And these guys couldn't be who they are without that dialogue. And the nudity is not the big thing to me. Honestly,
it's
you know,
language over, you know, nudity for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Next one I'm asking, and this is because I thought this was an interesting question, because so much of, you could clearly say, like, I won't say your childhood, but like your adolescence, like you've had some great cameos, I think, on Entourage built off of that. Like mm-hmm. clearly you were a Dice fan, and Dice mm-hmm. was on the show. Darian Roberts, at Darian Roberts 35, says, do you remember who your first celebrity crush was?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I mean...
Great question, by the way. I like that question.
And a good story to go with it. But it's so bizarre.
Beauty.
Because Heather Locklear was my obsession. And my parents had a condo in the Cayman Islands, which was a little 8-unit condo on an island that there would be no more than 4 people at any time. I swear to God, I take my friend Mitch from, this is 9th or 10th grade, and we go to the Cayman Islands, and we're at this little condo. And I look out the window, and there's
no way,
Heather Locklear sitting on the beach. I can't even post this picture, but I'll tell you the story behind it. She's sitting on the beach with Tommy Lee.
Oh my God.
And I'm looking, I'm like, whatever, I know Tommy Lee's Tommy Lee. But I didn't know who he was. I just saw him, and I'm like, if he could get her, I can get her.
Okay, hope, I got okay. hope.
So I walk over to her, and I'm like, listen, you got to make my girlfriend jealous. I have to take a picture, you know, whatever. And my cousin, Lauren, is a photographer, photography student. So she's going to take this picture, okay? And Heather Locklear drapes herself all over me. I'm 14. She's probably 22 at this point.
Oh, my God!
And draped on me. And then for the rest of the trip, I'm like, we have to go get these developed. People who are listening to this don't even know what that means. But it's like,
developed
we have to go.
Where?
And Lauren is like, she's going to save this roll of film for the entire trip before she develops it. She's not going to pay for the developing costs and the Cayman Islands. She's going to wait. No, you're not. We're going to develop this thing right now. And we get it back. And the picture, it's obviously it's me. She cut me off.
No!
Up, and you can see it's me, and Heather Locklear is draped over me in this tiny little red bikini. And anyone who wants to look up what Heather Locklear looked like in 1987,
one of the best looking women to
and she
walk
still
the
is,
earth.
By the way.
Yeah,
I still
she
love
still
her
looks
and,
damn good,
but incredible. So, yes, I do.
Well, I thought that was a good question because I really do. And I've always said this anytime I got asked a question of like, who's your favorite cameo, or whatever. I'm like, there's so much of like. Doug's kind of DNA in like the cameos. Like obviously there were some that I guess are more of a strategic, like, oh, that'd be just great for the show. Yeah. But then there's clearly some of the cameos are just people that you either respected or,
yeah,
I mean,
for God, sure.
Just amazed you didn't ever get Heather Locklear on though.
I tried.
Did you really?
Yeah. I don't know what, she didn't call me back. Might've been that picture. I don't know.
All right. I like this question, and I'm actually trying to think of this myself, and I couldn't come up with an obvious choice. This is Kevin Moran on Facebook says, Doug, if you could introduce one character from another show into the Entourage world, who would it be? I guess if you're just going to borrow and cross-pollinate.
It's very tricky. I would bring Christopher, Michael Imperioli, who I did a pilot with, who I think is one of the great actors in the world.
Tremendous.
I'm not joking.
He's tremendous.
And I'll never get over not getting a chance to really go forward with that show and with him. But, you know, the Dom, you know, crosses right with Michael Imperioli. And those are the guys I grew up with.
Yeah.
We had the nice, soft guys like our crew. And then we had like the
crazy, darker,
dark lunatics, yeah, who also, they could all blend together. So I would take Christopher.
I tried thinking because my first place went to Saul, mm-hmm, from Breaking Bad because, yeah, I finally finished Breaking
Bad.
But
that would
he used to yell at me that I've never saw it.
That would be a mind fuck.
But it would be because we've had Bob Odenkirk on.
He played Ken Austin. So
he sort of was, although it was definitely not Saul. It was done in a different capacity.
Well,
interestingly
enough that you say that. I mean, Bob Odenkirk was the inspiration for Ari from Larry Sanders. I mean, he's the agent on Larry Sanders.
Right.
And I was like, I need that kind of guy when I first started thinking about how this agent is going to be. So
now I feel like a douche because I had known him from Larry Sanders' show, what I remembered of it. But at that point when we worked with him, I had not seen a moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I hadn't seen a moment.
It's amazing because I was saying to Bob, who like
his a kid, moment. His now I would have geeked out. I kind of was like whatever with
his,
him.
His kids go to my school and I was like, I just wanted Bob to do this. But I said, look, I know this guy is really, forgetting his dramatic work, he's one of the great comedic actors in the world.
He's brilliant.
And I'm saying to him, like, Bob, I know there's not a lot for you to do here. This is really something for me because it means a lot to me because of that Ari connection. And he was so great, and I didn't know he was about to blow up. I had no idea. You know, I mean, I just...
Oh, it's just almost like that old adage. Like, if I knew then what I knew now, I just would have been all over. He did say, someone sent me, like, he was doing an article. Someone interviewed him for something, and they did, like, 5 random questions with Bob. Mm. And I forget what some of the other ones were, but someone said, who's your favorite Ninja Turtle? And he said, Turtle from Entourage.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. Wow. Someone, like, clipped that and, like, put that out there.
I love him. He is great, and he's a good person. Too.
I thought you would like that. All right, we're gonna do one. This one I'll ask, but I don't. Josh Yankovich. Hope I'm saying that right on Facebook. Any storylines during the run of the show that you almost pursued but didn't? Is there anything that jumps out at you?
I mean, there's so many. Again, not to repeat it, but
or is there anything that you regret that you didn't?
That lie detector party story. I really always.
That's a great idea for just a real party.
Vince brings in a specialist, and they ask these guys all sorts.
What would he have asked? Like stuff from like childhood.
You know, anything like Turtle? Do you ever jerk off to Sloan? You know, like anything. You know, I mean.
I think because then we have so many from this other guy that I don't want to read tons of questions from the same person. No, okay. Celebrity crush. Oh, did you ever? You said Sundance there. All right, this one's from my mom. I always have to read one from my mom.
Love your mom.
Now we did an episode a few weeks ago with my mom and her memorabilia, which AKA I call hoarding. I mean, she has a knack for collecting things. Like she has weird Michael Jordan stuff that she thinks is worth a fortune. We actually went on eBay and looked it all up. There's nothing there over $12. Right. Like a weird Michael Jordan head that has bubble gum in it. She thinks is going to be worth is the Holy Grail. It's worthless. But she does. And I yell at her all the time. I do a bad job because I always say, Mom, I could get that stuff for you. But I don't think, like, she literally probably has bought more stuff from the HBO. Like, the Christmas ornaments, the mugs, her stuff.
You're going to love it one day that she has that stuff.
I know. She has every article.
I used to hoard Sports Illustrated, and my mother threw them out one day. 12 years of Sports Illustrated, which you just go back and look at a cover from 10 years ago,
oh,
and you get so many memories.
It rushes back.
So, but what's the question?
She says, do you have a lot of Entourage memorabilia. If you do, what's your favorite? I'm a memorabilia freak, and I want to know because I buy everything. Oh,
I thought she wants to steal it from me.
Well, she might make you. By the way, she might make an offer. So, I don't know if you want to go the picture route, but what's like? Do you have a? Did I you mean, take something?
You know, the sneakers we talked about, but that's probably, I mean, I have it in a, like a jewel case.
I like the Medellin poster. You don't have that poster anywhere?
That poster is amazing, and now it looks familiar, and seeing my name on it, it looks very, it really stands out on that one.
That's how Ellen, I noticed was that poster. Ellen. I looked at it, I'm like, wow, that actually says me, D, Ellen. Yeah,
no one knows what an egotistical psycho I am that I actually just picked the movie because it would put my name in it and we'd get it out as much. It's not true, but I read that book on a vacation.
Well.
But the best memorabilia besides...
I mean, the photos that you have are Doug made as the best, not only rap gift, this is the best gift I've ever gotten in my life. You know, Doug takes a lot of photos. We also have a great set photographer. We used to break his balls for taking photos. And I actually had this realization with Bree too. Like, she loves taking photos. I get annoyed rather easily. But then when I actually see everything, it's like, thank God. So there is I don't even want to say a coffee table because it's beyond that, of like, chronological order.
Yeah, that actually probably is my favorite.
But also
I have jerseys from all the athletes, you know, and we have, you know, I mean, just a list of few, the MVPs, LeBron, Nash, Brady, Breeze. I got Russell, David Deal's helmet signed, and JJ Watt's Pro Bowl.
Got something with Strahan too or no?
I got tons of Strahan stuff Adrian Peterson's jersey.
That one we might have leave this one out. All right, well, we're gonna wrap up, but Connelly and I like to play a game. First of all, I do have to announce now, you and Connelly did an episode, you wanted to kind of tackle his numbers, we'll be honest. I won't say what the total numbers are, I don't want to give away, I'll give it to you off the air, but let's just say, and we're approaching like six-digit territory of downloads almost. You guys are separated by like, what was it?
3,900.
39, which is, but Doug.
He's ahead of me though.
But yeah, that's not that much at all.
It's not that much. Could get that
and
off.
And his episode has been up. That was our first
His
one.
Episode's up over a month
how,
longer
do
than
you see
yours.
How they're coddling me? I need to be ahead of Kevin. Okay, so I will
I put up the link for your first episode. You literally are one tiny push away. That's a very small percentage when I look at you two. By the way, you two are far ahead of almost of
and
of
by
everybody.
The way, whoever's listening, I don't care if you listen, just download
it. You don't actually have to listen to it, just download it and go about your
day.
I just
want to beat Conley. That's it. I don't care, you know. But I beat Mike Young. I'm ahead of Young.
We love Mike Young. You crushed Mike Young. Yeah, you did a number on Ronda. You might not be able to take her in the cage.
Don't say that. Yeah.
Oh, I told her. All right, we're gonna wrap up with some Connelly and I. And this is what you do when you're on set and there is a lot of downtime. So you do get bored on set. So we're not doing this in the self-indulgent way. You're doing it because that's just what, right in front of you. We often like to break down Vince's career. Now, separate yourself from Entourage. Just be Doug Ellen, the filmmaker who didn't have anything to do with Entourage and Vincent Chase is real.
Yeah.
Now, what would you think of this career? And because we always break it down by like, how much money does Vince really have? And you created such a great universe, you could actually play this game.
Yeah.
So here's what we know of, all right? I have broken down to the movies he's done and movies he's passed on and or screwed up. Okay, from the genius mind of Doug Allen, who could actually tell you what some of these movies did. Head On. Mm-hmm. Now, Head On was made for a good number. It opened as the number one action movie.
He didn't get paid on that movie.
Didn't even see
350 maybe tops, which you know
thrust him as an up and comer guy to watch.
Yeah, that put him in a possibility to get $1 million, $2 million for the next movie.
Queens Boulevard,
nothing, free, zero,
$60,000.
Yeah, he
had a banging extra on an Apple box to quote Ari Gold.
Yeah.
Okay, all leading. Oh well, in that time, passes on Matterhorn. Which would have been a multi-million dollar payday.
Yeah, that was a bad
move. Are you liking this reflection
so
far?
I like it very much. It's sad.
Well, it's about to get a lot brighter because we go to Aquaman.
Yeah, Aquaman, but he doesn't get paid on Aquaman. He fights to get Aquaman. He begs to be in that movie. He makes money.
He gets a few $1 million.
Yeah, I don't think
off
so.
Off of A1?
I don't think so.
I thought he gets like 3 for the first.
Maybe. I mean, maybe we said that, but he gets whatever he gets, he's lucky he gets. But Aquaman 2 was where he was going to get rich.
Okay, which brings me to the first movie that Vincent Chase gets fired from, which he was in line to make over the course of that. He would have made 20, 30 million bucks over the next
two. Made a lot of money, and there could have been an Aquaman 3. I mean, you know.
Okay, so Aquaman.
That's where he's most getting close to Wahlberg, you know, where he's actually becoming successful and getting rich.
He's
getting there,
but then he runs himself into a pretty bad spot. And then next thing you know, he's fired off of A2, which leads us to, as you wrote for Richard Roper, the Hindenburg of a screening, brings us to Medellin.
By the way, Richard Roper is one of my favorite cameos. Let's just say
it's
that.
It's a great cameo.
Because he, by the way, I wrote a whole thing in my best Richard Roper voice.
Right. Still not.
Which is very, very good, I think. But he's like, do you mind if I just do it how I do it? And he just killed
it. He's been
it.
Doing it a long
and
time.
And I watched it. It's one of those things, because that's a real surreal thing. Because I watched the show. I watched him on TV.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching him review this fake movie and doing it.
Like it was a real
like
it, movie.
Like he really saw something. It was phenomenal.
For those of you listening in the background, Lucas is back on Call of Duty. We are not shooting people here. That's Call of Duty. Thank you to Bobby Kotick for sending the advanced copy.
Yeah, he does. Thank you, Bobby. But now everyone thinks I'm crazy that I let my son just sit there and shoot for the last 3 hours.
We can edit that out. Okay, so Medellin, we all know what happened. He basically put every dollar he had, and that slowly started to destroy his career, which brings us to a set of decisions here. Smoke Jumpers, which he's fighting for, he passes on Benji, which would have been a few $1 million, right? Benji, they would have been paid his quote.
I think he probably could have gotten paid, and I think, you know, that's one of those where you go dangerously into like Travolta before Pulp Fiction, where you're doing Look Who's Talking, you're doing Benji 1, 2, 3, you're doing Look Who's Talking 2, and you're, you know, moms around the streets think you're a giant movie star, but you're really very uncomfortable with yourself and going home at night. Then you get Pulp Fiction and life changes and you get back to where you're supposed to be. But I think Benji still would have been a bad move, but would have paid him some money.
Do you think he could have survived if he had not gone the Smoke Jumpers route, which, and we'll get to what happened with that. And if he just decided to do Benji, in your mind, the brain trust of the, do you think he would have survived that or would have been?
I think Benji could have been the end. You know, I think Benji, I could have been thinking.
Rarely do we get the showrunner on. We were trying to get pin down David Chase to find out what happened at the end of Sopranos. Rarely do we get the showrunner to answer these kinds of questions.
I think Vince was 6 months away from doing a procedural on NBC if he does
Benji. CSI Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, he could have some troubles. What's interesting when you read this, though, is the amount of criticism we'd get for everything working out when his career just sounds horrible.
Oh, he's in the toilet right now, because we're going to move on to a little tiny movie, which was initially titled Nine Brave Souls, which then got dubbed Smoke Jumpers, which is what he passed on Benji for. And having to fight and claw their way into the second lead, he gets fired from. Yeah. So he's the second lead. Now, at this point in time, and I know most of you are like, wow, Jerry, you know way too much about it. I did have to do some Entourage research.
I'm actually having some flashbacks because you don't.
I had to do a lot of research.
The amount of time that I put with the guys
with
and
these chess
else.
Pieces of moving
but,
everything
but
around.
Not even the moving, just the idea of coming up with good movie ideas, which it is a shame because they're all like coming to life, and I'm just not good enough to actually make the Pablo Escobar story and this one, that one. But we've come up with great movies, and even Nine Brave Souls sounds really good. And just that's one of the things, some of the obsessions I have and Lev had. It's like I spent months on the name Vince. Like it was like I wanted it to be real. I wanted it to be cool. I didn't want it to be fake. And I don't even know if I succeeded, but you see there's a bunch of shows or movies you could watch, and the movie star's name is always something that's, you know, sounds so fake.
Garbage.
To me.
It sounds
so
fake.
So it was really important to me. And Vince, you know, I've spoken before about it, but, you know, it was named after Vince Vaughn, who at one point I thought maybe. Get him to do it, you know.
No.
But, you know, so anyway, there was a lot of thought that went into these movies, though.
Well, so he signs on to Smoke Jumpers after passing on Benji. And there was the moment in time, and I think this is really interesting because this is one of Bree's favorite shows, but there was a moment where he was up for a Frank Darabont show. Well, could now you could look at it and say, wow, Vince passed on Walking Dead.
It's crazy.
Passed on Walking Dead.
It's crazy. There's so many things that we kind of did, and Frank never said.
He never mentioned Walking Dead once. Like, right? Know? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and that's still like, I mean.
He had a meeting in the show.
It's a great cameo, too.
With Frank Darabont. Vince thinks it's for Frank's new movie.
Yeah.
But in reality, Frank wants Vince for his new TV show. We are horrifically offended that they would consider Vince for a TV show, which I always thought was hysterical. Like, here you got four TV actors just going like, TV, bro, you'll come back from TV.
The world is so different now. Now you could have been Walking Dead. And it could have been Walking Dead. McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are doing TV, and Vince Vaughn is doing TV now.
So he passes on Benji and the Frank Darabont in favor of Smoke Jumpers, which he probably didn't get paid a lot for. Maybe he got a producer fee, so a couple of hundred grand, maybe. Yeah. Gets fired from Smoke Jumpers, only to somehow, miraculously, through the help of Gus Van Sant, being revived and cast in Martin Scorsese's Gatsby. Did he get paid for Gatsby, in your opinion?
No.
Because Marty puts it all on the screen.
Definitely not. Marty puts it all on the screen, and also he's not a big enough name. He's lucky to be working with Marty at that point.
Blessed.
He's
grateful.
Getting a break. So he's not getting ripped off, but
he's stabilized.
He's getting a chance to change his life with that.
And would you say financially he's not out of the woods, but he's stopped the bleeding?
The way he spends, no, he's not out of the woods. Okay. He's never out of the woods, by the way he spends.
All right, so we open them back up. Gatsby comes out, does really, really well. And then now he is working with Frank Darabont. And then is this where the payday comes? Ferrari? He's playing Enzo Ferrari? Is he not getting paid on Ferrari?
It's a biopic. You're not going to get big money on a biopic. You're doing that again. You're doing that for prestige and awards. And he's got a back end if Ferrari blows up, but no, he's not getting big paid down for it.
Well, okay, so now he stabilized his movie career. He does Ferrari. The next time we see him, he's on the set. He's the untitled Cassavetes movie, which I don't think ever had a name. That one looks like a big action. He's got to be getting paid for that one, right?
Yeah, he's getting paid, but that's still like you're in your lower echelon of action movies. You know, you're making kind of a Cassavetes is an artist, so you're kind of making an artistic action film, not huge.
Luke, we're wrapping up, buddy. I promise. You must be starving. You starving?
No, not too bad.
Okay, so in that we have, somewhere in the midst of that, we forgot to mention Walk in the Clouds that got turned into Silo, which never happened. And then you also passed on the Edith Wharton novel, that one. He passed on that. Those were like honorable mentions. He does the Cassavetes movie. And then the Airwalker thing. That's where he was going to get paid.
Yeah, Airwalker is going to get paid.
Was going to be another big action comic book.
That's a big one.
And he basically, it never happened, right?
We don't really know. He leaves to go make it. You know, that's one of those things we leave up to.
But you like to think that it made it because then he has some money when we next see him.
He's got money. But really, he's like waiting for, Matt Damon goes back to Bourne Identity. Vince is waiting for them to call him for Aquaman 3 to really get paid,
Another honorable mention we got to mention is Matterhorn did resurface again. In order, it was make Matterhorn for me and I'll make Medellin for you.
Yeah.
Pass.
Yeah.
Didn't like that deal. And leads us to kind of where he is going into the movie. And I don't know if we could talk too much about his latest endeavors until the trailer drops. We'll leave it for the trailer, which is coming soon.
Yeah, that'll tell us some stuff. But he's stabilized. He's in a good place. But he can, with movies, it's one wrong move and you're gone. So, I think... where some of our criticism was that it always worked out or something, which obviously clearly from
this was a part of this.
You just came up
with. Like that, right? I have a lot of free time on my hands.
But it didn't always work out. And it is really realistic to what the movie business are. There are a couple of Wahlbergs who honestly just go straight up and stay there, which he has for 15 or 20 years. Most of them don't. And if you look at most of the great actors, there's been crazy ups and crazy downs. Travolta's a really good example of it because I think Travolta's as good as anybody. And there was a time where he was considered the greatest, and there was a time when he was an absolute joke, and then he became the greatest again, And
I had some help with this project, I'm not going to lie. The person wanted to remain nameless, but I'll tell you off the air. And we're going to use this person again, who is like an expert on Entourage material, because the next time we have you on, I would like to break down the career of Johnny Drama.
Great. I love it.
And Bree, I know I've kind of... haven't really involved you much this episode. That's unlike me because I feel like if I would have let you talk a lot, we would have been on a plane to Italy. anything to add? Because we got to wrap up. We got to get this kid fed.
Yeah.
Luke, you have anything to add, buddy? Wait, are you in the Entourage movie?
Yeah.
I knew that. I just had to tee you up right there.
I got to put the kid to work.
Of course. You know what? When I was your age, I had a job. Wait till you get audited, pal. It's not going to be fun. No, I'm kidding. Doug, I can't thank you enough for doing this. Absolutely. First two-time guest. And I will like to, as more Entourage movie information filters in that we could actually talk about, I'd love to get you on because there's a ton of stuff that I think the audience will enjoy.
Excellent.
All right, Doug Ellen, part two, everybody. Thanks for listening. And like my mom says, bad for business is good for business tonight. See you soon. You like that, right?
I do like that. And Lucas' first question, though, what's the podcast called? I go, bad for business. He goes, so it's bad for business for you to be on the show?
It's all bad, Luke. It's all bad. Sure. When you see me rolling by, you know that I